ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the first funerals held for victims of the Bondi terror attack in Sydney. Also, the New South Wales Premier recalling Parliament to fast-track new gun laws and measures restricting protests after terror attacks. And the former Federal Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, accuses the Prime Minister of radicalising Australia.
It's time for him to accept personal responsibility for the death of 15 innocent people, including a 10-year-old child.
First this evening to the breaking news that charges have now been laid against the surviving Bondi gunman, 24-year-old Naveed Akram. I'm joined now by our reporter, Chantelle Alkhouri. Chantelle, what can you tell us about the charges he's facing?
Well, Naveed Akram has now been formally charged with 59 offences over the attack that we now know claimed 15 lives and has been categorised as a terrorist attack. Now, the offences include 15 counts of murder, and the second gunman, Akram's father, Sajid Akram, was shot dead by police at the scene just after 6:40 p.m. on Sunday. We know that the pair opened fire on a community gathering right here at Bondi Beach, where there was a Jewish festival, Hanukkah, celebration occurring. More than 40 people were also injured, including two police officers with gunshot wounds.
And Chantelle, we heard earlier today the police saying that they wouldn't be laying charges until Akram was well enough in hospital to understand what was going on, given he was on pain medication. Have police revealed much about his condition today?
Yeah, so we know he's still in hospital under police guard. As you said, they were waiting to see that the effects of medication and that he was able to obtain a legal advisor. They said that they wanted his medical condition to be appropriate and that it was important he had appropriate cognitive ability for his fairness. They said they needed him to understand what exactly was happening. That's obviously now happened, where they've been able to press those charges, and I'm sure we'll hear more about his condition in the coming days.
And more about those charges too, I'm sure. Chantelle Alkhouri, thank you very much. Hundreds of people have today attended the funeral of a highly respected Sydney rabbi who was killed in the Bondi attack. Eli Schlanger was the first victim to be named publicly, and today he was the first to be formally farewelled. The service was held at the Chabad of Bondi synagogue. Rabbi Schlanger was remembered as a selfless and devoted member of the Jewish community and a loving husband and father. Tanya Dendrinos filed this report.
He helped lead the Chabad of Bondi for 18 years. Today, surrounded by loved ones and the community members he served, Rabbi Eli Schlanger's body was carried out of the Chabad for the final time. His funeral marked the first for the 15 victims of Sunday night's terror attack in Bondi.
Today we're here to mourn and honour our beloved Eli.
Rabbi Aaron Moss served as the MC and opened the service.
This loss is massive for the entire Jewish nation. But for our community here and for Chabad of Bondi, the loss is unspeakable. The thousands of souls that Rabbi Eli touched will be forever grateful to have known him.
Rabbi Moss then spoke directly to Rabbi Schlanger's family.
To his wife, his support and his life partner, Chaya, there are no words we can say. Only that we are here and we will all ensure that what you built together with Eli will endure always. To his dear, dear children, whom he loved and devoted himself to endlessly, Priva, Nossen, Rosa, Ari and Chimshi, just know that your father will always be with you. You were and forever will be his number one.
Rabbi Schlanger's father-in-law, Rabbi Yehoram Ullman, delivered a eulogy, saying going a day without his son-in-law doesn't seem possible.
It is unthinkable, Ellie, to talk about you in the past tense. Everybody has regrets in life. After what happened, my biggest regret was, apart from the obvious, but from the things that I could have done more, is to tell Ellie more often how much we love him, how much I love him, how much we appreciate everything that he does, and how proud we are of him.
The Jewish community suffered an immeasurable loss on Sunday night when two gunmen opened fire on a Hanukkah event at Bondi Beach. 41-year-old Rabbi Eli Schlanger was one of the key organisers.
Our community suffered our own 7th of October. Proportionally, that's what it is. So many people and so many connected to this place with Eli, with Yaakov, so connected to us over here. He's Albonda sitting here. We have Reuven Morrison, put so much into this place. Alex Clayton, Tibor Weitzen, Edith Brutman. We have over here the parents, the grandfather of a young girl, innocent girl, 10 years old, and many others.
Mourners filled the Chabad for the service, among them opposition leader Susan Lee, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison, and the New South Wales Premier Chris Minns. The impact the rabbi had on the community was clear by the sheer number of people who turned out. Those who were unable to fit inside stood outside and on the street, while others watched the stream online. There was a heavy police and security presence. The street surrounding the Chabad was closed to traffic. Speaking after the service, Rebbetzin Elke Feldman of Newtown Synagogue said she can only hope it leads to change.
I think the Jewish community wants to know that they are heard, that they are seen, like the lights of the candelabra on the menorah. They want to be seen, they want to be understood, they want to be respected, to be allowed to live in harmony and peace, not to be dismissed.
The ABC understands Rabbi Eli Schlanger's funeral was one of a number held today as this community, united in grief, honours the lives so tragically lost.
Tanya Dendrinos reporting. The New South Wales Premier Chris Minns has announced today he'll recall Parliament next week to fast-track new laws after the Bondi attack. He says they'll include tougher rules on gun ownership and possible restrictions on protests after terror attacks. Miwa Bloomer has more.
Premier Chris Minns says right now the priorities are clear.
My responsibility right now is both community safety and community harmony. And I have to explore all possible ways of ensuring that we lower the temperature in New South Wales and Sydney.
He says new laws are needed fast and the state's politicians must act.
On the 22nd and 23rd of December, the government will call back the New South Wales Parliament to deal with urgent legislation that we believe is required pre-Christmas to keep the community safe and ensure there's unambiguous laws in place when it comes to public safety.
He says gun control is in urgent need of reform.
Firstly, in relation to firearms legislation in the state, we are proposing a bill which hasn't been finally drafted, but we will share with the opposition as soon as possible to cap the number of firearms, to reclassify straight pull-up and pump-action shotguns, to look at reducing magazine capacity for shotguns.
Chris Minns also wants to push through legislation which would seek to remove the right of shooters to appeal to the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal when their gun licence is revoked. He's also considering bringing in new laws to restrict protests after a terrorist attack.
So we're looking at reforms whereby when there is a terrorism designation in the state, the police commissioner may not accept applications for protests on the grounds that it will both stretch police resources and secondly, add to community disharmony and as a result, a combustible situation in the state.
The Premier has not provided specific details on how those rules would look. New South Wales Police Commissioner Mal Lanyon has provided an update on one of the two police officers injured in the Bondi attack. The probationary constable, Jack Hibbert, is 22 years old and has been in the force for just 4 months. Commissioner Lanyon says he was patrolling the Hanukkah by the Sea event when he was shot twice while attempting to take down a gunman.
I'm really pleased to say that Jack was awake this morning. We had a lovely conversation. He's a really positive young man. Tragically, we know that he's going to lose the sight in one eye as a result of his injuries on the weekend. Jack is incredibly comforted by the knowledge that, as his commissioner, I have given him an undertaking that we will support him. We will find appropriate duties for him depending on the nature of that injury and his capacity.
Police had previously released the name of the other injured officer, Constable Scott Dyson. He remains in hospital, recovering from his injuries.
Miwa Bloomer reporting. The political debate surrounding the Bondi massacre has escalated significantly. In an emotional speech, the former Federal Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, has called on the Prime Minister to accept personal responsibility for Sunday's atrocity. A member of the Jewish community, Mr. Frydenberg, said Anthony Albanese has allowed Australia to become radicalised. Rachel Mealy reports.
After laying flowers at the Bondi Memorial, Josh Frydenberg called for action.
This massacre at Bondi is the greatest stain on this nation. I'm here to mourn, but I'm also here to warn. Unless our governments, federal and state, take urgent, unprecedented, and strong action. As night follows day, we will be back grieving the loss of innocent life in another terrorist attack in our country.
The former Federal Treasurer says governments across the country have failed Australians of Jewish faith.
We, as a Jewish community, have been abandoned and left alone by our governments. Our governments have failed every Australian when it comes to fighting hate and anti-Semitism.
Josh Frydenberg condemned the federal government's inaction and called for a royal commission into Sunday's attack at Bondi Beach. He pointed to areas where the government could take action to combat anti-Semitism. They included banning Islamic hate preachers and prohibiting pro-Palestinian protests.
Our Prime Minister, our government, has allowed Australia to be radicalised on his watch. It's time for him to accept personal responsibility for the death of 15 innocent people, including a 10-year-old child. It's time our Prime Minister accepted accountability for what has happened here. And it's time our leaders stood up and led at last.
Earlier in the day, the Prime Minister conceded that his government needed to take stronger action against anti-Semitism.
We want to stamp out and eradicate anti-Semitism from our society. We want to also stamp out the evil ideology of what would appear to be, from the investigators, an ISIS-inspired attack. That has no place, that sort of hatred.
The stronger language followed yesterday's criticism from former Prime Minister John Howard, who accused Anthony Albanese of a failure of moral leadership for not denouncing anti-Semitism. Professor Mark Kenny is the director of the Australian Studies Institute at the ANU. He says this is a difficult political moment for the government to navigate.
I've never seen a circumstance of such national peril, such social peril, and a challenge to social cohesion where the politics has become so shrill and so divided so instantly.
He says the government's previous positions on recognising a Palestinian state and appointing an anti-Islamophobia envoy will now be hard to defend.
I think the federal government has found itself in a vulnerable position because of the recognition of a Palestinian state, the recognition of Islamophobia as a problem in the community. These things have been taken by supporters of Israel and the Jewish community more broadly, or at least elements of it, as in some way equivocation. The term moral equivalence has been thrown about many times before now. Suggestions of anti-Semitism associated with looking for a peaceful outcome in the Middle East. All of these things have are the backstory, really, to this tragedy now. And there's a lot of people kind of joining the dots, I think wrongly in terms of causation, but nonetheless joining the dots. And the federal government really has no way of actually arguing its way out of that, other than insisting on the impartiality and the wisdom of the policy positions that it has undertaken.
Professor Mark Kenny from the Australian National University, Rachel Mealy with that report. Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong has confirmed she's been speaking with her counterpart in the Philippines after it was revealed the Bondi gunman spent much of last month undergoing military training there. Their movements are now being investigated by authorities in both countries. Isabel Masali has more.
On November the 1st, Naveed and Sajid Akram arrived in the Philippines for a nearly month-long trip. The father travelled on an Indian passport while his son used an Australian one. Their destination was listed as the southern city of Davao.
In the southern Philippines, it's known to be the safe haven for foreign terrorist fighters and also considered to be one of the most favoured destinations.
That's Dr. Romel Banlawi. He's an independent academic and the chair of the Philippine Institute for Peace, Violence and Terrorism Research. He explains in recent years there's been a significant decline in local terrorist incidents after a range of preventative measures. But
my argument is that although terrorist threats in the Philippines are declining, they are not disappearing, you know. That's why we need sustained efforts because they can still reinvigorate themselves. Bondi incident is a strong reminder to all law enforcement authorities in the world that we need to still pay attention to the threat of terrorism.
Now questions are being asked about what authorities in the Philippines knew and whether they could have passed on information about the two men's visit. Dr. Banlawi says the two countries usually cooperate.
I think they have existing intelligence exchange, existing mechanism for joint assessment of the threat. So I was expecting that they should know better. I don't want to second guess them, but apparently with the incident at Bondi, there was mistake somewhere, you know, because it could have been prevented.
But he adds law enforcement in the Philippines has limited capacity to monitor visitors.
That is one of the major considerations on why terrorist fighters come to the Philippines, because they feel that they can easily evade law enforcement authorities.
Australia's Foreign Minister, Penny Wong, has been speaking with her counterpart in the Philippines, but she won't reveal much about the investigation and the pair's recent travel.
So obviously I'm constrained given that what I can say. What I would say to you and your viewers is that I did speak to my counterpart. We are working very closely. We have had a long history of security collaboration between Australia and the Filipino government.
When asked if she acknowledges there's been a failure of intelligence and security services,
I've no doubt that the answers to those questions will form part of the response to this in the days and weeks to come. I think the first point, though, is we need the police investigation, which is obviously led by New South Wales, but is a joint investigation, given that this is a terrorist event. We need those investigations to be finalised.
Criminologist Dr. Clark Jones is a visiting fellow at the Australian National University and the executive director of the Reshape Justice Group, which works with terrorist prisoners in the Philippines. He doesn't believe the trip by the two alleged gunmen would have raised concerns.
I think the father travelled on an Indian passport and the son on an Australian passport, but he was totally, he was allowed to travel. There was no, I don't think there was any marks on his passport.
And when considering how the Bondi attack could have been prevented,
I would say it's about being able to join the dots in a better way to provide more flags about, you know, what could happen. If the son had come to ASIO's attention back in 2018 when he was younger and his association with Islamic State, this is also so easy in hindsight, but if they had kept some sort of attention and observation or to put him through some sort of intervention
But he says for now the focus should be on the victims and their families.
Isabel Massali. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. Just a reminder, you can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. The federal government has released the mid-year budget update today. It forecasts the deficit will be lower than expected over the next 4 years. One big area of unexpected savings is the public service, where nearly $7 billion has been saved by reducing the use of consultants and cutting back on travel and other expenses. But the update, known as MyEFO, also shows some categories of spending and revenue are now looking in worse shape than previously thought. Here's the Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers.
We've been able to make the budget better still, and that's because of the difficult but responsible decisions we've taken to find the savings. Because of those efforts, we've been able to get the deficits down in every year. We've been able to get debt down every year. And that's the first time that we can find in 30-odd years of MyEFOs that that has happened. Now, one of our motivations there is to make room for these big pressures. We've made good progress on some of them, the NDIS, we've made good progress on aged care, and one of the reasons why payments as a share of the economy is a little bit higher than the quarter of the economy that we had it at in our first year is because some of these pressures from the care economy.
That's the Federal Treasurer, Jim Chalmers. Ian Verinder is the ABC's Chief Business Correspondent, and I asked him to explain the overall picture revealed by this mid-year economic outlook.
Well, Sam, over the past few years, we've seen a gradual improvement in the budgetary situation, and the mid-year forecast for several years now pointed to a better position, and it's the same this time around. Our deficit is $5.4 billion lower since the election was called. It's still $36.8 billion in deficit, so that means we're spending far more than we're getting in revenue, and that's not a great thing. So we do need to get that situation into a much better position.
What's actually sending Australia's debt up?
Well, essentially, that very basic bit of accounting, we're spending far more than we're getting in terms of revenue. Now, one of the reasons for the improvement is that we've had more tax revenue come in the door than expected. And I guess the argument and the criticism of the government that's been around for quite some time is that that's great if you've been lucky enough to get improvements in personal income tax and in company tax. But what happens when the luck runs out? What are you going to do to try and turn that situation around? Because we do see increased spending around a whole range of different things. We're talking about hospital funding, disaster relief, age pensions, veterans payments and the like. So these are all very important things to fund, but the cost of them is rising.
And how big a factor is the interest Australia is paying on its debt?
Well, it's, you know, that's one of the big problems. This is why you need to get your budget out of deficit and into some kind of a balanced position, and hopefully at some stage even into a kind of a permanent surplus to get rid of that debt. Our debt levels at the moment are going to be about $993 billion for this year. That's gross debt. It was forecast to actually go through $1 trillion this year, so we're in a slightly better position. But one of the big problems is that the fastest growing expense that we have on the books is interest costs. So it becomes this vicious circle where you're funding your deficit by sending out more debt and borrowing more money, and interest costs keep rising. And the more the interest costs rise, the more debt that you have to fund.
And a lot of people paying off a mortgage are worried that interest rates will go back up again next year. I noticed the Australian Industry Group looking at the forecast today said it shows Australia is heading for higher interest rates and the government has missed an opportunity to tackle inflation. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, there's no doubt that inflation has risen in the last few months. Where interest rates go, really, it's an open question. We had forecasts a few weeks ago that saying we're going to have interest rate cuts next year. That quickly changed, and now it's going to be interest rate hikes. There are some banks out there saying there'll be no change to interest rates. But there's no doubt that inflation has been very difficult to tame. same. And we've got in this budget, this MIEFO outlook, we've got inflation forecasts rising to 3.75% next year. That's up from 3% and 2.75% the following year. So, you know, we're definitely seeing forecasts for higher inflation and wages growth not growing as fast this year. So that means that what we're going to see is a decline in real wages, which is really a decline in household living standards. So things are going to be a little bit tougher as a result of that.
Ian Verinder is the ABC's chief business correspondent. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, I'm Andy Park for the ABC News Daily podcast. Who could do such a thing? That's the question Australians are asking after Sunday's mass shooting at Bondi Beach, killing 15 people. How did they radicalise? What drove them to pull off the worst terror attack in Australia's history? Today, what we know about the shooters and the unresolved questions for our security services. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.